Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the Boomer and the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio. Today is Friday, August 12th. 2011, and I'm Pete Peters.
And I'm Deborah Brown.
And just a quick reminder that the entrepreneurial revolution is underway, and we invite you to join. Visit boomerandthebabe.com for all the information by clicking on the link and joining our community of entrepreneurs working to give business, to do better business, and sharing their ideas. Our guest today is Sherry Matheson. Sherry is a award-winning costume designer and style consultant whose work is included in Hollywood films, TV shows, and commercials for Fortune 500 corporations. She's costumed movie stars including Oscar winners Susan Sarandon, F. Murray Abraham, Rod Steiger, and Gregory Peck, actresses Brooke Shield and Celia Ward, singers Billy Joel and Lena Horne. Sports stars Sugar Ray Leonard and Mickey Mantle are amongst the people that she's worked with. The industry icon Lee Iacocca is also among her many famous names that she's worked with as far as their style is concerned and their clothing presentation. Welcome to the show, Sherry Matheson. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks so much, Pete.
We always start with Deborah, and she kind of kicks things off. And so we're going to do that because that's kind of the way we do things.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. And the first thing I always like to ask for is what I call your two-minute movie. And by that, I mean your life, however far back you'd like to go, with as much detail as you'd like to give for basically 2 minutes. So that's what we call your two-minute movie. So please, let us have it.
Okay. Well, I began as a fine artist and attended school for that. I had combined my talent finally as an artist and my interest in fashion by getting into costume design. I was a film costume designer as opposed to theater for 28 years. I worked with a lot of actors, actresses, dressing them for their roles. And then having moved out west one day, I decided to reinvent at the suggestion of actually a magazine editor who had me dress her. She was the first person I dressed. And I got into more and more private style consulting, which is what I do today. I also give a lot of seminars on the subject. But most importantly, I wrote 2 books on the subject of aging well and looking your best after 50 for men and for women. The first one was Forever Cool, and the second one was Steal This Style, Moms and Daughters Swap Wardrobe Secrets. Both were published by Random House.
Fantastic. That is fantastic. I would love to have been a fly on the wall as you were styling and doing the costuming for all of those wonderful people. One of the people that Pete mentioned in the introduction was Celia Ward, and I think she is just one of the most beautiful women, and it just seems like she has the perfect body type for just about anything. Is that a fair statement, that she can pretty much wear anything, or it doesn't work that way, does it?
No, she probably could wear quite a variety of clothes. I mean, and still, if you work with somebody on one-on-one, you find out what they personally like. So they might be able to wear anything, but they might not like everything. So, but the average woman doesn't have that option. The average woman is 5'3 and a size 14, and she has to make her choices, and she has to make them appropriately for her age as she ages and for her personality and for her work and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's a competitive world out there. So whether it's socially or because you're still working, it's really important to have that visual language together.
It really is. And if you are in the public eye, which, like you just said, if you are working, frankly, you probably are in the public eye at some point in your day or your work week, you really do need to step out and feel like you've got all of your, you know, arrows in the quiver, so to speak. I mean, if I don't feel like my shoes are looking good or my jeans are just not right or I've got on jeans when I really should have a great pair of black slacks, things are thrown off, you know, almost as bad as a bad haircut. You know, it's like you just can't get it together, you know?
Yeah, I think personal style is very important, not only as a language, as I just mentioned, but it's also how you feel about yourself. It's so connected. If you feel you look great, somehow your mood is up, you feel better about yourself, and you present yourself much better to the outside world.
Exactly. Now, let's talk about Forever Cool for a little while, and then we'll steal over, and then we'll switch over to the other one. Steal over. The Forever Cool book is really about age-appropriate and yet modern and, you know, looking your best, as you say. How is that how you would describe the book, and what is exactly the format of that book?
Well, the book starts with an introduction about my experience and what has influenced me and how the book came about. So it really shouldn't be skipped, because the reason I caution that is both my books, Forever Cool being the first one, is heavily, heavily photographed. Real people, men and women, that I dressed in before, as they would usually dress, which was my never cools. And on the other side, you would see the forever cool look that would be exactly an apple to an apple. In other words, if I dress somebody in jeans and it's a bad picture, then on the forever cool, you would have a good picture of what that same style would be. In other words, again, in something very casual. I don't show a person in jeans on the never cool and then put, her in a cocktail dress on the
right.
Other side, saying that's forever cool. The books, both my books are in first sports style. That's my first chapters. Then in casual styles, which are a very, very important part of our lives today. We've become greatly casualized, no matter, even if you're in professional world, it's become a more casual world. But as we get older, especially over 50, and possibly in retirement, possibly trying to travel much more, that wardrobe transition went from our days of being professionals into days that we're trying to be more comfortable in our clothes, but at the same time we want to look great. So that can be challenging. And then the next chapter would be professional style, because so many of us are still having to work. There's no question that many of us cannot afford to stop working, and some of us have even reinvented our work. So it's really so important to look modern and with it. And because we've got much younger people competing with us who do look that way, hopefully. And then we have the black tie style for those times when we go out extremely dressy. That would be my finishing chapters. But what's interesting in my books is I also have Get Inspired chapters where I tell you how to shop, what to look for, and the resources that you need to find out about. But having been a costume designer makes my input multifaceted. I talk about movies that you should see, books that you should read, museums that you might want to look at, and the inspiration, certain stores which you might not think about. Let's say if you're a Target customer or Walmart customer, that's fine, and there are a lot of budgetary reasons to be that customer. However, it doesn't mean that when you, let's say, visit New York, that you shouldn't go into Bergdorf Goodman and look and see everything and treat it, if you must, as a museum, because it is a museum of sorts to find out about beautiful clothing and what should inspire you, so that when you do go shopping within your price point, you know what to look for. You see, so I feel that a lot of people sequester themselves only to their hunting grounds, and I don't believe that that should be the case.
Well, Sherry, is it the case that somebody's style, whatever it might be, is quite possibly available in many varying price points?
Exactly. For instance, J. Crew is a, what you call a trickle-down style venue, and they try very, very hard to give you high style at a great price point. And in my book, well, it wasn't in Forever Cool. Well, actually, in Forever Cool as well, but I had a lot of J. Crew in it. And later on in Steal This Style, I had a woman who's 86 years old wearing J. Crew. And the clothes were very affordable, and they were very youthful and stylish as opposed to young, you see. And that's a very important, it's not just linguistics, it's a visual. So
that does,
to be, yeah, I'm sorry, yes?
No, I was just going to say that is a good distinction, youthful versus young, you know, vibrant or vital versus sexy, or, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of
exactly.
ways that people can say, I want to look sexy, when what I really mean is, I want to look healthy. I want to look, you know,
attractive.
Vital. Exactly.
Yes, actually, that's exactly what I mean. And the befores, say, in the world of inappropriate sexy, I show that in my book several times in the form of photographs of these real people. And then on the other side, I show how sexy can be done really well past the age of 50 and even past the age of 70 and 80, because those are different intervals in your life, and the appropriate factor becomes redefined at regular intervals, or should be. And those people who don't look in the mirror in that way, in a critical way, in a healthy critical way, are shorting themselves, because then they don't reassess properly and they don't get the appropriate factor, which is so important.
Well, I think that you use the term healthy vanity in a way
yes.
that kind of ties this together. And I think it's important to look at yourself in the mirror and like what you see. It doesn't mean that you have to be Botoxed, or, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to have plastic surgery. It doesn't mean that you have to have any of that. But you have to really like what you see, which I think really starts on the inside, and then, you know, kind of gets wrapped around your attitude. And then once you've got that all squared away, go ahead and put on the right clothes, and you've got yourself a big bingo.
Exactly. Deborah, that's exactly the point of my book. Nowhere in my books, either one of them, do I mention anything about invasive surgery or any of that stuff. It's all about personal style and really caring enough to pay attention. Because if you're interested enough and you educate yourself enough on any subject, not just style, then you become better at it. And this is just one of the many aspects of our life that integrates into a well-lived life. But the truth of the matter is the interest must be there. And that's why I encourage people to go into stores where they don't necessarily shop in, but they will expand their vision of what's going on and really look at other people. I tell them to develop 20/20 vision and observe other people. Observe people in the mall when they're badly dressed and think about it. Why? And are you doing anything like they're doing? And then when you see somebody that really looks great, turn around and really examine why you think they look great and pick that apart. So the thinking process is really important. And understand that whether it's architecture or even a well-designed room, it's all part and parcel of the same thing. It's about a visual life and understanding and really keeping up to date with what's modern. What's really modern is very important. That's a part about being youthful and keeping up with whatever is out there. A lot of people let themselves sort of lag behind.
Well, Sherry, as the male of the species, as I'm out doing business and attending networking events and so on and so forth, I differentiate between a woman that is hot, and by hot I mean the neckline cut down to the navel and trying to sell it almost type of situation, and somebody else that is really, really attractive, and somebody that is dressed appropriately, and they don't have that come hither appearance, but yet they're very appealing. And that I think is something that as a male in the species and in dealing with women on a regular basis professionally, that I would much rather deal with the woman that is professionally appealing style-wise rather than somebody who's just trying to shake it up by shaking it up, so to speak.
It also shows a maturity level, I think, on your part, as well as the woman that you're admiring, and intelligence. What you're really perceiving is a certain kind of intelligence about herself and a growth process that has to happen as you age, and that's part of the visuals as well that you can project. A woman that just depends on her, so to speak, hotness is an insecure woman.
Well, I do agree with that. There's a lot of them that are around there being very insecure. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, well, society has not helped the women in general. They've put high value on sexuality and the youth quotient. And a lot of women, especially women who were very beautiful, have an even harder time because it was all about seeing themselves in the mirror of other people, especially men. And if men pay attention to you, well, then in fact you exist. And if men don't pay attention to you, you don't exist as a woman. And that's a terrible thing for any woman to experience feeling about herself, but it's up to women themselves, because I'm not sure men will ever change that way. It's sort of biological to always stare at a woman who's half naked. You know, she doesn't even have to be a beauty, but the fact that she's revealed so much of her biology, you know, is just something that they feel compelled to look at. So it's sort of something that women have to fight and realize that they're not projecting an intelligent image. It would be great if men helped, of course, but, you know, like I said, I think it's something sort of part of nature. And
just can't help ourselves, Sherry.
But you don't help women in the process in
right.
maturing and in becoming more of themselves and feeling safe in nurturing other parts of themselves and becoming beauties in another way. You know, and that's what my books are about, really.
Well, it's interesting being the father of a daughter, my only child, and Deborah's stepchild, that she helped me raise her, and we're grandparents of two beautiful little girls, and I'm very pleased to say that my daughter is, although an absolute knockout, she has got a style that is very I wouldn't call it conservative per se, but is very appropriate.
She's modest.
Modest and appropriate.
Yeah.
And the other thing
and
I wanted to just kind of
say. And it might be built on classics, which is the core of my books, both of them. They're basically about identifying clothes that will, like your daughter can wear, and then Deborah can wear, say, a simple white shirt. The difference is maybe the choice in the styling of the white shirt, but essentially it's a wonderful white shirt, which can be sensual in the sense that it might skim the body, but it should never pull or anything like that, but remain that beautiful white shirt, say with a pair of white slacks, and then you accessorize it with beautiful accessories that really speak to who you are. But the idea, the core idea of my books is defining those classic items that will take you from your youth into your older age without ever being inappropriate. And I think that that's the crux of the problem. Most people don't understand what those pieces are, and they don't understand that the quality needs to change and shift as you get older. It has to become better. You need to buy less things as you get older, and the quality, the ante, has to be put up. And that's why I suggested shopping in good stores and just feeling the fabric so that you have an understanding of what that goal might be. But when you look at the pictures, you'll see safari jackets, and you'll see trench coats, and you'll see what I call the Audrey pant, which is something Audrey Hepburn made famous. And items like that, the ballerina shoe, the kitten heel, all those things that are basically classically oriented, and how you can wear them from when you're 20 years old all the way up into your 80s, 90s, depending on the person.
Well, I would like to strike forever the words young and youthful when we're talking about style for women 50 plus and change it to stylish.
Ageless,
stylish. Stylish would be fantastic because, and I'm not saying you have to do that, but I'm going to do that. Because I have some friends that are 55, 58, 59 years old that are the most stylish women. One in particular used to be a Don Karen and DKNY.
DKNY.
You know, that, I mean, that's all she would wear. And then she fell in love with her dog, which she never thought she would even be a dog owner, and she switched to some other Land's End and some other things. But she is one of the most stylish, amazingly put-together people, and she cleans out her closet regularly. Is that a good plan? Just clean out so that you've always got some classic, you know, up-to-date, stylish pieces, and know what you need.
Yes, and less is more it becomes so true. I mean, it's always true, but it becomes even more true as you get older because you just don't want all that junk in your closet. And earlier I mentioned that the reassessment of your body and how you look, your skin changes, your hair changes, everything changes on a much quicker interval as you get older. Let's say, between 50 and 55, you might change a bit. Between 55 and 60, you'll have changed more. Once you get into your 60s, it's every 2 years. And after 65, it could be every year that you see greater changes. And you can work with those changes if you look at yourself in a very, very healthy way, and just say, okay, this is the way I am. These are the changes I'm going to make in my closet. And not only that, it's a combination of how you look and what's out there, because you want to be aware of the trends, but you want them to apply to you in the right way. You don't just want to get into trends and fashion and blindly adopt them just because they're out there. irrespective of the way you look and your age. It's just not going to work for you after a period of time. So it's critical that you marry those two aspects of life. So the 2020 vision, the interest in getting excellent magazine resources, in looking at other people really well and observing like you do your friends, you know, whether it's friends or even, as I said, just walking in the mall. You know, in Europe, people look at each other by sitting at cafes and they just observe one another. It's part of the social fabric of European life. In America, we tend to rush about a little bit more, or we're sequestered to our cars. We don't look at other people well enough. We don't look at the right magazines. And as a result, the general population is losing, you know, the look factor, the right look factor. And I wish they were more into it, more interested, and would spend more time, because that would be reflected in the way they looked.
Well, you know, if you think about old Hollywood, oh my! I thought I took that phone off the hook. I'm sorry about that. when you look at the old Hollywood movies and things like that, it's just amazing what the different style was at that time, and everybody looked put together and sharp and handsome, and the women, you know, were beautiful. And now it's jeans and a t-shirt, jeans and a t-shirt, jeans and a t-shirt and flip-flops.
Yeah,
and
but you really hit the nose, you know, it's something I discuss in my book, because up to the 50s or 60s, in terms of the movies, first of all, the studios dressed all the movie stars, the studios. So a costume designer actually, like Edith Head, would have dressed Elizabeth Taylor up to a certain point, even for her private life, because there was no, not much definition between the private and the movies, because they were out there being photographed so much. The studios wanted to make sure that their movie stars always looked amazing. And so you see an enormous difference, say, with somebody like Elizabeth Taylor up to the 50s and 60s, and what happened to her look as she aged and she was on her own, dressing herself, so to speak. And
right.
Yeah. Now, also, the general public up to the time of the Kennedys had more of a structure. Women wore gloves, hats. Men wore hats. There was more of a decorum to the way they dressed, and people dressed more similarly in a very decorous way. Today, they don't. I say all hell has broken loose.
Right.
Because there's too much out there for people to choose from, and they don't have the knowledge of what to wear, because of the you know, what I've spoken of earlier. And so because they're not directed properly by the media and they don't have the proper interest, this is why you see what you're seeing.
Exactly. Let's switch over to the other book, Steal This Style, because I know that you were recently quoted in the New York Times, congratulations, on page 6.
Thank you.
About the mother-daughter Lohans, Lindsay Lohan and her mother and their style. And what I like about this other book is that you have 20 sets of real mothers and daughters who, you know, you can talk about this for us, you know, what were their style concepts and who swiped from whom, so to speak.
Well, you know, that article in the New York Times took the stance that more and more mothers are looking into their daughters' closets to, you know, dress for themselves. And I made the point, some very important points, that first of all, not all daughters know better than the mothers. It's a case by case. The assumption is because the younger daughter is in the younger world and is more, therefore, hipper in her outlook and is more into fashion, which is a nice generalization, but it's not always true. And a lot of daughters are simply not tasteful, and they can lead the mother astray and make some pretty bad decisions with the mother. I have people in my own family where that's happening, where the mother is generally uninterested in clothing and just figures that whatever her daughter is telling her must be true. And as a result, she's not looking her best. Let's put it that way. And, you know, I think that you have to do your own due diligence on both parts. The daughter has to, as well as the mother, and not make any assumptions. So in the book, I show daughters beginning at age 20, because I think that's when you really begin to develop a style. When you're younger, it's still, you're in your teens, it's a different time. And as you mature, you begin to think more and more seriously, and it's a process. And you might try with a lot of experimentation when you're very young, which is great. That's the time to do it. And as you get older, the more you should mature into a style that really works. And the ratio, I showed daughters that are 20 and their, say, mothers are 50. If the mother's 50 and still has a great figure, the difference in their clothing doesn't have to be as large as, say, if the daughter is 20 and the mother is 60. And there, the difference has to be greater. And I show what they can adopt from each other. So if the daughter can wear, say, if the concept of the outfit is a certain way, the mother can adopt the concept, but in an appropriate way for herself. So let's say the daughter is wearing something from Lucky Brand, and it's sort of 70s oriented, and it sort of has that vibe, you know, that is fun. And in fact, the mother might think, oh, those were the days, you know, hearkening to her own youth. Well, today she can adopt that look, but in an appropriate way that still has sort of that hippie vibe, you know, but looks right for her age. It doesn't look inappropriate on her. But I show pictures of the daughter next to the mother, but I always show the mother in an inappropriate way in the never cool picture. So just the mother, not the daughter. The daughter appears with the mother on the right-hand side of every pictorial story. And again, I have tons of pictures, and in both books, most people love to look through at the pictures, and the big mistake is not reading my whatever I write, you know, my tips, etc., and explanations next to the pictures, and all the other chapters, including the introduction, are really, really important. And the idea that when you go to a movie, how much inspiration you can get, you can actually learn how to dress well. For instance, the movie Something's Gotta Give, the way Diane Keaton looked in it, had wonderful, wonderful clothes in it. Also for men, by the way, Jack Nicholson never dressed so well as in that movie. And it's something that the public can learn from, but they usually, you know, just sort of don't look at that detail.
Right. Well, how did you find the 20 sets of mothers and daughters? What was that process like? How did you do that?
That was huge, because I just moved back to New York after, you know, I lived there for about 35 years, and then we moved out west, and then Forever Cool was done here, and then I moved back east for a period of 4 years. And it was at that very beginning of that period that Random House asked me to do also the second book, and it meant that I had to find these people. I didn't know a lot of mothers and daughters. All my friends had boys, and that was so difficult because, in effect, I was looking for strangers, and I was looking for people like in Forever Cool that don't look like models, you know, that are real people and that like to go in front of a camera, so they have to have the right personality. They have to be very open to my ideas and not be judgmental, be open to the process. And they have to be mothers and daughters that embrace the idea that they would be shopping together and be flexible with their time. And so believe it or not, especially out east when a lot of older women, meaning the mothers, are still working. They are not retired easily. They go on into their 70s still working. So the daughters were studying probably or just beginning jobs, and the mothers were still working. So the time schedules were really difficult to get to. Plus, I wanted a huge variety of women. I wanted all kinds of ethnic backgrounds. I wanted all kinds of sizes. I wanted to challenge myself to having women that were both very petite and up to size 21. And so, because a lot of women do have weight problems as they get older. So it was very critical for me to show women who are just like all of us and have the same challenges. And I put ads in Craigslist. I tapped women in the supermarket. I went in all kinds of stores looking for them, and I just stopped people in the street. And I asked everyone that I knew, do you know anyone who? And sent out email queries, and one thing led to another. And then finally, I got my 20 people, but actually my last set of mothers and daughters were chosen months after I actually began, you know, because I couldn't get them all at once.
Did they find it to be a fun and happy time together, or were they bickering, or did they report to you how that experience was?
It was a great time. Nobody bickered. Nobody, you know, everybody got along extremely well. I knew that time was short. I was, you know, when you're given a timeline by a major publisher, you have to stick with it. And I knew that there would be phases in this book that would be very difficult to do, and I had to pick the right people that weren't going. So if I felt that there was any problem at all, I excluded the mother and the daughter. And there were many people who were too shy, you know, and were too self-conscious. And there were many aspects to it. It was the physical and the personality part that attracted me to people. But the attitude was so important, and I had some great people that I'm still friendly with and I still am in touch with now that the project is way over and I've since moved back to Arizona. So,
how many people, Sherry, did you have to talk to and considered before you got down to your final 20?
Over 100 sets of mothers and daughters.
My goodness.
100. And it was just me doing it. So you can imagine what that was like. And I had to go into the boroughs of New York City. I had to go in into New Jersey. I went looking all over Connecticut, driving around. In one particular case, I had to even hire a car and driver to take me there because the mother and the daughter were not living in a place that was safe, probably not for them either. And I just went for it. You know, I did what I had to do to find the people. It was critical that I find them by the end of the photography session. So let's say I started out with five certain mothers and daughters, and as I went along, if I had a spare day, I continued the search. So the search really wasn't over until the very last pictures were taken.
Well, now you've concentrated your efforts in the Northeast. Would the results have been different, or would the approach have been different if you were in Los Angeles or if you were in the South or Southwest? Would there have been a different flavor to everything?
Well, not in terms of my philosophy, no. Forever Cool was shot here in Arizona, and everybody that you see in the book were either personal friends, married couples, people that I knew worked with my husband, and a few people. One of them was working at the Mayo when I chanced to be a patient there, and I asked my doctor, do you know anybody who is sort of looks Eurasian or is Asian, because I wanted to represent every type of ethnicity possible. And, for instance, working here in Arizona was difficult finding Asians or even African Americans. There are a lot of Hispanic people and a lot of blue-eyed blondes. And, God, it would have been a boring book to just see one type of person in there. And it wouldn't have been effective either for people to find themselves when looking through their pages, because what I want is for somebody to say, you know what, I relate to that person. There's something about the way they look or maybe the way they dress, because I have everybody from very conservative people to very flamboyant people in the book. But I think flamboyancy can be done well just like conservatism can be done well. Say, you know, your daughter, her instincts might be more conservative, but that doesn't mean she can't be stylish. So,
she's very, very stylish, yeah.
Exactly. So within the realms of your comfort zone, no matter your personality and your figure, it's important to be able to define that. And that's what I challenged myself with as a goal with both books. So, but the area of the country can mean many, many things. And out east, there was a large, large, diverse group of people that I could pick from. It's really a melting pot. So in that sense, it was very good. But it was a huge, huge area to run around in, you know. And I had more, in essence, more people with the mother-daughter context than I did in Forever Cool, because I didn't always have a mother and a daughter. Actually, in Forever Cool, though, in the very beginning, I had one mother-daughter and I had one father-son showing the kind of clothes that they can share. And that's where Random House picked up the idea that they wanted a whole book devoted to just mothers and daughters. I'm sorry to say that not enough attention is given to men nowadays.
Well, that was my question, Sherry. How tough would it be to do the father sons?
It would be tough because the media and the publishing world doesn't think men are interested. And they think that it is, you know, that the interest is sequestered to, you know, a certain type of male and not the general heterosexual male. And, you know, maybe to some degree, you know, I hear men saying, well, I leave that to my wife, or, oh, that's not important, so long as she looks good. But it's not true. When you walk into a room and you walk in as a couple, people look at the two of you. And if one of you looks bad, it's a reflection on the other, and that's what people really miss conceptually on. They don't understand that they do affect their each other.
That's what happens to us. We walk into a room together and people go, boy, what does she see in him?
well, you know, it's something that, if this is true, Pete, it can be so easily improved on.
Now, wait a second, Sherry, I have to tell you, he has the last members-only jacket in the world.
Oh, no.
Yes, he does. It's black.
Hopefully he doesn't wear it. It's one thing
we're
to own
because...
it, it's another thing to wear it. You know, I also make a huge point of the color black, you know, and how difficult it is as you get older to wear black and how you probably should avoid it. You know, so that, there's so many aspects to this. It's a really interesting and huge topic, and I try to cover the whole enchilada with these two books.
Exactly. Now, your style philosophy is about bridging timeless core pieces with items and accessories that are what we would call in right now, which is hip and stylish and all that stuff. What are a few simple ways that people can actually combine what they have and maybe pick up some new pieces to get that modern look?
Well, you know, this is sort of a general question because this is where I come in as a style consultant and I look at what you've got and even say if it's worth saving. And some people really have not paid attention to this to the point where most of it is not worth saving. The items that are worth saving, the ones that we just said were more classically oriented possibly, or accessories that have a wonderful classic aspect to them, a longevity to them. For instance, let's say you went to Santa Fe and you bought some pawn jewelry, you know, some great Native American jewelry, and you have some great pieces. Those are pieces that you will have forever. And it doesn't matter if you were 20 when you bought them. You can still wear them when you're 95. You see, so those are the pieces worth saving. If you have a great white shirt, if you have a wonderful pair of dark navy jeans that really fit you well and do something for you, well, of course they're worth saving. And you can add things to them. If you have a great short little trench-style coat, of course it's worth saving. I go on with a long list of things visually that you will see on every page. If you open up Forever Cool or Steal This Style, you will be able to identify that core piece that you might still have in your closet that is worth saving, okay? Then, especially with accessories, there's a lot out there that can uptick your clothes, you know, and express your personality with, which is really a critical part, the shoes, the bags, and not to get too crazy with it. I mean, there's certain bags that are classic bags. And you can have them forever. I have some bags in my closet that I've had for 40 years. And they still look as great as ever because there's a classic aspect to them. And there are others that are just too trendy. You just get bored with them. You see them all over the place. And you just want to chuck them. As you get older, it's nicer to have things that you want to hold on to and invest in them and invest more money into those things as much as you can afford that you can identify. And this is where my books really come in. They're visual ways to help you identify this because I can talk about, say, classic things until I'm blue in the face. Unless I show you visuals, it's very hard for people to understand, and that's why I put so many photographs in my books.
Right. Now, you've mentioned J. Crew a couple of times, which leads me to believe that that's probably a good retailer for the boomer population. Do you have any others that you would like to suggest that people check out, maybe even go to their sale rack and see what's going on?
Yes, Ralph Lauren. Ralph Lauren is an excellent resource, and they have Ralph, you know, for the largest sizes. The it's not the same line as his couture line, you know. There's no question that there is a barrier factor for sizes when it comes to designers. They like to keep their more expensive lines, their more high style lines, with a barrier of a size 12. And then if you want to go further, let's say a J. Crew, for instance, in their catalog you can find larger sizes, taller sizes, whatever. Not quite half sizes, but with Ralph you can, even that. You know, so those are two examples of classically oriented designers or shops, I should say, because J. Crew has a staff, with Jenna Lyons being the head of that staff, which has done really, really well. And a lot of people, a lot of other designers and real designers, as well as shops like Banana Republic, have copied J. Crew. So you'll see even on the mannequins a certain way of mixing things. And, you know, the art of what I call the art of the mix is a very important part of all this. And if you start out with something relatively classic and even conservative in some people's eyes, say from Ralph Lauren or J. Crew, and you mix it up really well with other items, whether it's a great shawl or scarf or, you know, a sweater or, you know, or just do color blocking. You know, you can have the simplest clothes. You know, I mentioned a white shirt and a white pant or a white T-shirt or a white polo shirt with white jeans. But now picture an orange sweater just flung over your shoulders, okay? And then maybe a cuff that has some coral beads, you know? So you've mixed your coral oranges with stark white. And it's such a fresh, clean, simple look. A lot of women, as they get older, and men too, overcomplicate their looks. They should simplify. And they should get back to much more basic, clean looks, not get so fussy, not over-accessorize. Pick your accessories carefully and for longevity and for quality, as well as your clothes, for that matter. So I harp on these things because it really works, not because I'm just, you know, in other words, I've experimented with this for all my life. So we're talking about a person who has had a lot of experience working with tons of people, and it really works. And I prove
it. Well,
it
sounds right. It sounds exactly right to me. It really does. And one of the things that I know you have said is that when you turn 50, suddenly your style gene expires. I think that is absolutely hysterical. Because what we have been saying ever since we have become the Boomer and the Babe Show, and that's our brand, is at 50, you're just getting started. So I think people really do need to get your books. And they need to figure out how... They need to figure out what happened to their style gene, and if they never had one, how can they get one and really make the next phase of life the best phase of life, which is one of our other things that we say when Pete closes the show. He'll probably say it again today. So I really appreciate the fact that you've put the book together, and I do think that people should read what you wrote so that they understand not just pictorially but also your philosophy, so they can actually start to apply it for the next 30 or 40 or 50 years they have left. Does that sound right?
Well, yeah, thank you for encapsulating my thoughts. And I like to think, like you say, that 50s are a beginning, a new beginning. And in a way, what I do, like they said in the movie Jerry Maguire, I like to think I complete you. You know, and I like to think that this is something that should be fun and should be approached in that way. And it's one of the wonderful things in life that we can do for ourselves just with a little bit of interest.
Well, Sherry, how can people get a hold of you if they want to have confirmation or conversation or consultation with you? Do you do that by appointment? Do you do it via the phone? How do you work with people?
Well, I usually work by appointment. I've had a few people, including, believe it or not, a blind woman who did phone sessions with me. A blind woman who was so interested in how she looked, which I think is amazing. But I basically meet with people. I either meet with them for one time or for 15 years. I have clients now for that long. And it depends on what you want. You have to tell me what you want, and I can do anything. I've designed clothes for people. I've done special occasions, and I also do a whole reassessment of closets and lifestyles and what people will need as they get further on in their years and to look ahead in a positive way in terms of their wardrobe. And I work by the hour. These books are very, very helpful as a beginning point. You can go onto my website, www.sherry, spelled with an I-E in the end, S-H-E-R-R-I-E, Matheson, M-A-T-H-I-E-S-O-N.com. And you can, you know, use my website. And you can also click to get on Amazon, get your Best Buy, or Barnes & Noble, the book, either book or both books, because they're both very handy.
Well, Sherry, thank you very much for visiting with us today. It's been a truly a pleasure learning everything about style, or a lot more about style than I ever dreamt existed. And I think one of the things I'm going to do when this show is over is I'm probably going to have to go burn that members only jacket.
You've been exposed.
I mean, that's been a favorite of mine for years, and I guess it just became not so favorite.
Uh-oh, we've been outed.
It's a ash and don't.
Yeah, and never cool.
Well, it's definitely going in the trash now. Thanks again for being with us today, Sherry.
You've
been
so
listening
welcome.
To the Boomer
thank
the Babe.
You
bet. Thank you for listening to the Boomer the Babe show on Blog Talk Radio. Remember to visit our website, boomerandthebabe.com. Check out the Entrepreneurial Revolution with regard to that site and the link on that site. You can also listen to any of the audios of our past shows right here on Blog Talk. And have a great weekend, everybody. And make sure that the second half of your life is the best half of your life.
Interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.